Hey folks, this is comedian Mark Maron, and what the fuck? Why are you listening to Mr. Media Radio?
Today on Mr. Media, I'll talk to director John Burgess and actress Aubrey Dollar, who just debuted a delightful and sexy new romantic indie film comedy, One Small Hitch. Stick around. Aubrey and I have lots in common. She once appeared in a movie called Failure to Launch, and my whole career has been described that way.
Oh.
I doubt that's true.
Yeah, stick around, John. Stick around. So much media, so little time. Who keeps track of it all? That would be me. This is Bob Andelman, and this is a Mr. Media interview. The show is brought to you today by Amazon.com, the world's greatest store for everything from books and movies to computers, TVs, and even my favorite soft drink, Pepsi Wild Cherry. Thinking about buying something online from Amazon or just want to do a little window shopping? You can save yourself a lot of money and help support Mr. Media, that's me, by clicking on one of the Amazon ads at MrMedia.com and start your shopping with us. Get yourself the new iPad or Kindle Fire. Feeling a little racy today? Amazon's got what you need to feel exciting and new, as they used to sing on The Love Boat. Remember, start your next shopping trip from the comfort of your own home, car, hotel, or office with Amazon.com at MrMedia.com. That's right, MrMedia.com. And folks, thanks for your support. Mr. Media is recorded live before a studio audience of young men and women whose lives are already comedic, but will never be described as romantic.
Aww.
Poor kids. In the new media capital of the world, St. Petersburg, Florida.
Why would you tell your parents that we are engaged?
The best wedding gift you could give to your mom.
How come we haven't heard one word about how he proposed?
She's not even his type.
You don't think...
Play fiancé for a few days?
Is that too much to ask?
Welcome to the family! I'm sold. That looks good.
I can describe the appeal of director John Burgess's new romantic indie comedy in two words. Human moments. Moments of doubt, of lust, of heartache, of weakness, and ultimately, of satisfaction. Indie comedies are a lot like a box of months-old chocolates. I mean, you truly never know whether what you'll find will be fresh or stale. Now, small, low-budget films can either be crushed by the single-mindedness of a director who can't see the thorns while stepping on the heart, or they can be infused with blood, sweat, and tears by a director who understands the delicacy of tone over body parts and crudeness. Now, in One Small Hitch, John Burgess captures the latter. I know he was wondering which it was going to be, but it's definitely the latter.
I was hoping. I was definitely hoping that that's where it was going to go.
We were all hoping it was that.
Sure.
Now, this is one sweet, charming, funny movie. And if I wasn't 25 years out of the dating pool, I'd want to take a first date to see this film.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it definitely made me think that, hell, I might even take my wife anyway. Just pretend. Much of the credit for the film, I think, goes to the performance of beautiful Aubrey Dollar, who, if you're watching on video, and why aren't you, you can see right in front of us. Aubrey, who looks a little bit like Isla Fisher, I think, in Wedding Crashers.
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome.
Did you ever get that?
Never.
No. I get Anne Hathaway, weirdly, which I take both as a compliment. These are some beautiful ladies.
Actually, yeah. After the screening, a couple of people said she's like a cross between Anne Hathaway and Rachel McAdams.
Oh, thanks.
I would say that was a compliment.
That's a big compliment. Yeah.
That is pretty good. Well, obviously I'm engaging in conversation here, but I have to tell you that Aubrey plays up the funny and ironic with kind of a perfect exuberance in the film and arrives at moments of angst with just enough sadness to make us root for her without finding her character, Molly Mahoney, to be pathetic or whiny, which would be a bad thing.
Yeah.
Now, One Small Hitch just premiered at the 2013 Cinequest Film Festival, and that's actually where these guys are talking to us from. They're in the hotel. They've been dealing with screenings all weekend, screenings that have been very, very successful. We're going to ask about that, And you'll be able to see this film. It'll be appearing at more festivals around the country. Hopefully there'll be a U.S. Theater distribution deal in place soon. And if you're outside of the United States, there are already many deals in several countries. So keep an eye out for this film to be coming to you. Meanwhile, John Burgess, Aubrey Dollar, welcome to Mr. Media.
Hi. Thank you. Hello, everyone. Thank you for having us.
Delighted to have you. It's like we've done this before in many ways.
Yes. It is. Like that.
Comfortable. Yeah. Very nice. Well, first of all, congratulations on the film. John, tell us a little bit about the reception it got this weekend at Cinequest.
Actually, we had our second screening today, and both screenings, in fact, have been overwhelmingly positive. We actually had a few people tell us that it was the best film they'd ever seen at Cinequest, and these are people who have been coming and supporting the festival for years and years, so that was incredibly flattering. I couldn't be happier with the response. We were packed in the first one, and the San Jose rep seats around 500 people, and it was half full this morning on an early Sunday morning. And from the previous screening, there was a person there from NBC, so they sent out a camera crew to interview both of us because they want to help us get the word out, because she felt it was the best film she'd ever seen at Cinequest and has been covering the festival for a very long time. So that was both flattering and exciting, and it's a lot of it has to do with Aubrey sitting next to me and Shane McRae, who she plays opposite because of their astounding chemistry. And without that, then the film would have fallen flat. So.
Yeah, it has. It was pretty overwhelming for me being in these screenings, because you sort of sneak in the side and watch them. But like, you know, if people hate your film and it's not a fun process. So they've just been really generous and kind and complimentary, and people really seem to be enjoying it, which is great.
Yeah, it's one of the things that you can't really fake is laughter. I mean, people can come up afterwards and say, oh, I like your film, or, you know, God, they'll talk about the lighting or something if they don't. But when they come up and they're just going on and on about the performance and the casting and the characters, and today we actually watched the film from start to finish. We didn't just slip in at the end. So we got to monitor the audience and see when they laughed and how hard they laughed and how long they laughed. And we got them early and they laughed all the way through and they had lots of questions to ask. So you could tell that it was genuine and that they were engaged. And that's very flattering.
I watched the whole thing like this.
Do you really?
Yeah.
Is that because you're uncomfortable seeing yourself on screen, or why is that?
I wouldn't say I'm like super comfortable seeing myself on screen. It's like it's an odd thing which you don't consider. I was telling John later, there's a shot in the film that's like just my thigh, which is a strange experience to be in a movie theater and your thigh is like 20 feet tall and all these people around you are looking at your thigh. And that's a weird thing, dude. That's a weird thing. And like the guys next to me were like talking about me some, and I just
felt talking about your thigh?
Yeah, no, not my thigh. But I was so worried they were gonna like notice I was sitting there that I was just, you know.
Oh. Now, now I've seen the film, so the shot of the thigh, I'm thinking, is when you're in the bathroom and you're changing your clothes. You're changing to the black, tiny little... Yeah, because I was trying to think. Not that I've memorized all those parts of the film, but there was... And you know why I remember that? I wasn't going to bring this up, but I'll tell you why I remember that.
Go on.
So in that scene, Molly has made this decision to change into a little sexy...
Lingerie,
yes. And the reason it struck me was later in the film, and I think that a couple weeks have passed in time, right? We see her again in lingerie, and she's wearing the same black lacy panties.
Interesting.
No, actually, it's the opposite.
No, they're different panties.
Are they really?
Yeah.
Yeah, they're different black lacy panties. You know, women tend to own lots of pairs of black lacy panties.
I don't know that, but I'll take your word for it.
No, they were different, though.
It was actually an outfit that she gets at the bridal shower from everyone who's adoring her with gifts. And then she, as an independent female character, decides that she has made the choice to seduce Josh.
Right.
And it's a cute moment between the two of them, because there's been this long-standing cat and mouse going on throughout the picture. So I think it's a strong choice for the character.
Okay.
Would you agree?
Yeah, but they're different panties.
They're different. Thank you for clarifying the important part.
But they are different panties.
I just thought they seemed familiar. But, you know, it just shows you that I'm just not paying that much attention to the detail. You know, the fringe is probably slightly different, or, you know, they're a higher cut or a lower cut. Okay, I'll take your word for it. I'm not going to go back and...
New subject.
Yes. Yes, let's moving on. I made it worse, right? You were talking about them looking at your thighs 20 feet tall, and I just made it worse. You're welcome.
Well,
So let's cut back to John for a moment. John, how did you come by the script for One Small Hitch? How did this happen?
The script was sent to me by a person who was interested in managing me after he had seen my graduate thesis film from the University of Southern California. He started sending me a series of scripts, seeing if I might be interested in any of them, and one of them was an early draft of One Small Hitch that it wasn't exactly where it is now, where you've seen it and everybody else will eventually if they want to. So I met with the writer and we worked out an option agreement, and then we started writing together, tinkering with it over about a year until it was ready to take out, looking for financing and showing to actors, so on and so forth. But I just really fell in love with the story and the characters that Dodie had come up with. And once I got in there, Dodie's Jewish, I'm Irish, so I was able to punch all the Irish off. And together we restructured it a little bit and created what it is today.
And this was the first full feature that you've done. You've done a number of shorts.
Yes, this is my first feature. I did a lot of shorts and music videos and commercials and stuff like that, either producing or directing them throughout my time at USC and a little bit after, all working towards the feature. But yes, it is my first feature directorial and producing.
And so, you know, when you – I mean, there's two things going on there. Obviously, you're looking for that opportunity for your first time directing a feature. But at the same time, you want to make sure it's the right picture. Why was this the right picture over waiting a little longer or maybe something else? What, you know, what made this fit for you?
For me, it was a few things. I didn't want to go out and do something that was – too difficult in terms of a lot of special effects or huge things that could break a budget. I felt this script could be done on the cheap, on an independent level, or if we were able to find kind of great financing from a studio backer or some kind of big independent financier. It ended up being that we had to do it on the really low budget indie level, because to come up with the money, I actually had to sell my condo in Hollywood and raise money from friends and family and family members. So that we came up with around $500,000, which seemed to be the minimum budget level in order to just get it into the can. And once we were able to do that, and in order to do that, I actually had it start in L.A. and then take place in Chicago. Their early version that I read actually started in San Francisco and then took place in Boston. And I wanted to switch them for several reasons, and Dodie asked me why, and I said, well, it'll make it more personal for me, but also because I have lots of connections in both those cities, and it'll be cheaper and I can pull favors and so on and so forth. So when the time came, we were able to stretch the money a lot further, and I got to go back to my hometown of Chicago to make my first film. So kind of like a love song to Chicago in many ways.
And Aubrey, so no pressure on you and Shane that he gave up. He has no place to live now, so that you could be in this movie and maybe have a big breakout opportunity. But no pressure.
Sure, no pressure.
No pressure. Looks like it's all going to work out, though. I mean, you know, you're scared all the way through, but I figured if I wasn't brave enough to put my money where my mouth was, you know, why should anybody else take
and
a chance?
And you didn't tell us that at the beginning.
No, they didn't know any of that. No. They didn't know any of that.
That's good.
Yeah. We found out towards the end, and then we're like, shit, we should have been trying harder.
Well, I would think, John, that...
can I say that word? Sorry.
Yes, you can. No, you can say all the words on the show.
Right.
All of them. I would think that in this situation, it's almost better to be a little terrified, because you're going to force yourself to work a little harder, to get everything out of yourself, because the cliche is that you had skin in the game. I mean, you had a lot to lose.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's always enough to be nervous about anyway, but for a first-time feature film director, if you don't knock it out of the park and it doesn't at least make back its money and make some profit, you're not going to get to make another one. So that fear is there anyway. But yeah, by adding such a financial risk as well, it's definitely motivation. But I really believed in the script and I knew these characters, and I couldn't wait to get on set and bring them to life. And it was such a fun process of casting and putting the whole cast together, because I believe 75 to 80% of directing a film is all done during the pre-production process. And then the other 25% is putting all the pieces together and monitoring tone and making sure that the actors are understanding the scenes and listening to each other and communicating and hitting all the marks and finding the funny moments. And oftentimes when you're on set, you find little nuggets of just serendipity that, you know, wasn't there on the page, and it comes to life when you're actually there playing with the dialogue. And then sometimes things will get changed, and oftentimes the mistakes are what ends up in the film, because they're genuine moments. So I would say by the time we got done with the script and then done with the editing, and then it was all finished, it was a combination of a lot of what Dodie and I had written and rewritten and restructured, and then what the actors and I came up with on set playing with, and then what the editor and I were going back and forth. And, you know, you move a scene and say, how does it work here? Is it funnier? And what if we just drop that line and go straight to this one? So it's a process all the way through. And it was such a great roadmap with the material. So we had a good time. And everybody seems to be responding to it really, really well.
So you get the script and you're confident you've got the right script and you're excited about that, and you find the money. And then the next big moment, I'm guessing, is when you put the two leads together, Aubrey and Shane, and you go, you cross this finger and this finger and the other fingers and the toes, and you've got, I hope, they seem really interesting separately, but you put them together, and now you're committed. It's like, what if there's no chemistry? What if they're not, you know?
It was a fear, because they did both get offers and they didn't have to come in and audition, but I watched so much tape on them and talked with them both on the phone, and they were vetting me as much as I was vetting them, since I was a first-time feature director. I'm sure they were terrified.
Maybe.
It's okay.
No, I mean, you know, the whole process, it's sort of a leap of faith you take, and I think you trust that, you know, the role is great and the script is great, and you just sort of hope it works out. And sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes it's a total nightmare. But in those cases, usually no one sees the film. So,
well, and which is why people do screen tests. And we didn't have the luxury or the money to get them into a room and test that. So there was a bit of a leap of faith, but we ended up getting way more than we bargained for. Their chemistry on set, which, you know, transferred onto the screen, was magic. Which then, with just surrounding them with incredible character actors like Robert Belushi and Ron Dean and Daniel J. Trevante, who plays the dying father at the center of it all. It just added to what was already magical, because if they didn't have chemistry or there was an awkwardness between them, then the whole film wouldn't have worked. So I have to credit Shane and Aubrey. And I mean, it was Monica Mikkelsen and Claire Simon and I that made the final decision to cast them, and they accepted it. And it just worked out, I think, for everybody, because I really can't picture anybody else in the role but you guys now. And I think that's what happens when somebody really belongs in a role, is when you can't think, oh, it would have been better if so-and-so had done it.
Huh.
You know?
That's very nice. Thank you.
Well, and so Shane's not here, but, and I don't have a list of his credits in front of me, but the one that really struck me was that he was in The Adjustment Bureau, which was a great film. And then Aubrey, who did 4 years on Guiding Light.
2.5 years.
2.5 years. Boy, it just keeps changing day to day. I can't keep it straight.
Well, no, it's that IMDb says it was four episodes.
Four episodes, but it was actually 2.5 years.
Everyone watching this knows how to change that. Go change that.
Okay. Well, there's got to be someone.
How do you use IMDb?
No idea. And what I was very interested in, and even more current than that, is you did a couple episodes in the final season of Weeds.
I did, yes.
You were the young waitress who wound up marrying Justin Kirk's character. And that was kind of a wild ride at the end. That was one of the better storylines that wound up the run of that show. So,
oh, thanks.
Good on you. That was
It was a lot of fun. I was a big fan of that show before, but there is something about sort of TV series when they're in their later season that everyone is so relaxed and they know their character so well, and the set is really chill. And I had a blast doing that. I wish I had been there for longer.
Well, it's weird too, because his character had a better final season than the lead, Mary Louise Parker, did, I thought. So you had a good role opposite the guy who really got to really kind of lead the way out of the series. So that's good.
Cool. Well, thank you.
So tell me, because kind of the same thing I was just asking John, the chemistry between you and Shane becomes very important. Is there anything you can do to manufacture that chemistry if it doesn't work, or, you know?
I mean, like, yes and no. I think, sure, you can always fake it, and I think every actor has had to fake it probably more times than not. I think we got really lucky. He and I come from a really similar theater background in New York, and we have really similar ways of working, and we got along personally, like, phenomenally well, which is a rarity. I mean, it possibly, of anything I've ever done, we got along like it was, you know, famously got along. And it's also, I think, a thing, because especially when you do a film that's out of town, we both live in New York and we're in Chicago for about a month shooting it. He's married to like a really lovely woman, and so there's no like questions about it getting funky there, which can sometimes, and that gets very bad and weird. So yeah, we just had this like great kind of, we really loved each other, and I think that sort of shows in the film. I hope
he's
at least.
Fun too. He's got a real goofball personality, so he was always goofing around and cracking jokes. Him and Aubrey got together like peas and carrots, but they also got along with the rest of the cast and crew and stuff. And he would be here with us at Cinequest, but Shane actually just had his own first child. So he's taking care of a newborn at the moment.
Very nice. Well, we've tried to bring him up a little bit here and there in the conversation to make him feel a part of things. And
indeed.
Later, Shane, you can phone it in, okay? You can just phone.
Sure.
Send us a baby picture or something. We haven't actually talked too much about what the plot is, but I'll give it a quick shot. You correct me where I go wrong, or if you want to take it from here. But essentially, okay. Shane's father. Well, there's a wedding. Molly's. I wasn't clear. Whose parents are getting married?
Mine.
Your parents are they remarried?
It's her mother is getting a second marriage. Okay. You never really find out what happened to her father or anything. We didn't get into a whole lot of backstory, but her mother is getting remarried.
Okay. All right. That's what I thought, but it just occurred to me when I went to describe it, I wasn't sure. And then, so Molly and Josh?
Josh.
Basically grown up together. Josh and Molly's older brother are good friends. And Josh has found out that his father is dying and is very sick. And through the magic of cinema, he concocts a fiance in Molly, which is Aubrey's character, and as they say, hilarity ensues. But it's got a really good storyline. You sort of know where it's going to go, but it takes you on an interesting path to go there, to get there, and it's just a lot of funny moments, a lot of sexy moments, and
The quick log line that we use is two childhood friends. That take a wedding engagement, make a dying father happy. If I had to do this movie meets that movie, I would probably say it's The Proposal meets 16 Candles or Say Anything. Those are movies that I grew up on in the 80s that I just adored, by John Hughes, Cameron Crowe. I love old films by Frank Capra. I saw this story as a modern day It Happened One Night, which is considered to be one of the groundbreaking or first romantic comedies. It is, you definitely know, boy meets girl, boy loses girl, boy gets back in the end. In this case, they've known each other all their lives, and I think that's what's kind of interesting, or more interesting, as part of the struggle. It's not that they meet and then lose each other and then he goes chasing after. They really have known each other all their lives, so they start to realize individually, because they're thrown into this ridiculous lie that everybody's perpetuating for the sake of the dying dad, that they do have feelings for each other, and they're fighting them, and they don't want the other one to know, and then they both admit it at separate times. And there's a lot of fun hijinks that feel real instead of some ridiculous high-concept film that a studio may have overdone. I tried to be very careful, and I appreciate what you said earlier about tone. Very important. And we ride the line a lot of getting out of the realm of reality, but then just pull it back so that it stays where you go. I can see that.
No, and people kind of hate on romantic comedies, but there's definitely something to be said for a film. I think it makes you feel good. It's positive. It's not kind of the sad side of falling in love. It's the happy side, and you kind of know when you start watching it, they're probably going to end up together, and like,
yeah. You'd be disappointed if they didn't.
But I love, I know, it's a letdown. I love romantic comedies. So.
And the big question in terms of the cast, I have to ask you, Daniel J. Travanti is in this. If the folks under a certain age won't know who in the world he is, but someone my age knows, oh my God, he's the captain from Hill Street Blues. I mean,
yes.
The greatest cop shows, general dramas in television history. How does Daniel J. Travanti wind up in this movie?
Through the casting process, but
he lives in Chicago, doesn't he?
And he lives in Chicago, which made it even better, because he. It's his home, and he acts on stage and stuff a lot. So when we were looking, and he came to our attention, we sent him the script, and he fell in love with the role and brought so much to the table, because we really needed an actor that had the gravity for all this craziness going on around him as a catalyst that everybody would believe, everyone would do that. And I was excited when he took the role, and it was a little intimidating the first time I had to give him direction because he has 13 Emmy and Golden Globe nominations and, you know, a Lifetime TV Land Award and a plethora of others that I can't remember right now. But, you know, I thought, what's it going to be like when I have to give him his first piece of direction? And he was so professional and so prepared and kind of nurtured me almost like a father. So I thank him profusely for agreeing to take the role.
So he didn't just say, "I got this kid."
No. Well, and I was secretly calling him like two take Trevani because he would nail it on the first one, or I would have to just give like a tiny little hint or suggestion on a way to take it, and then he would nail it right away. So we would do a backup for camera in case there was a glitch in the HD or the digital track. But yeah.
What was my nickname?
Well, you guys. I had to work on the everyone, so I didn't give everyone a nickname. I let you and Shane go and play.
Cool.
Yeah. Okay. We'll let you off the hook with that. Aubrey, let me ask you this, and we'll start to wind up. You've got this summer. As we're recording this, it's March, and you've got a play this summer in New York. Is that right?
I think so. Yeah. It's a play by this playwright, Lucy Thurber. I've done a bunch of readings of and through the Rattlestick Theater in New York. They're doing like five of her plays. So that goes from late summer into the fall. And other than that, it's sort of for actors right now, lots of TV pilot auditions and they all sort of cast in the next few weeks and shoot in April. So, you know, maybe one of those, maybe not. You never know. But yeah, that's kind of what I'm doing right now.
All right. Land a pilot. Have it picked up, come back and do the show again, okay?
Sold.
All right. And John, so tell us how people will be able to see this movie in the coming months as it works its way through the, you know, the whole process.
Well, if they're overseas, it's already started playing in the UK on BSkyB, and it's been doing very well, getting lots of love on Twitter and Facebook. It's going to be seen on television also in France on MCs. I can't remember all the stations. My sales agents are on top of that, and I'm having meetings when I get to LA next week. But it's going to be seen in Italy and Spain and Australia. They're working on the US distribution deal. We're hoping for a theatrical. If not, it'll be a big network television premiere on some station. I don't know exactly what yet. And we're still touring all over in the festival circuit. We're going to be at the Kansas City Film Fest. We're going to be at the Nashville Film Festival in Tennessee. It's submitted to a number of other ones, so we'll have to wait and find out. And it's having another screening here on March 7th at Camera 12. And Robert Belushi is going to be coming up and doing a Q&A with me at the end of that one. But if people want to keep track of distribution, you can go to www.onesmallhitch.com, where there's links to the Facebook page, Twitter page, IMDb page, where people can keep track of that kind of stuff. And Aubrey has her own Twitter.
I do, yeah.
But you can go find her and give her some Twitter attention as well.
Yeah.
She's a Twitterer. I'm not really a Twitterer, but okay. I'll Twitter for the film.
I've gotten better lately.
And, you know, as I was thinking about this, you know, Aubrey mentioned about pilot season. You know what I think? I think you should, after the theatrical run here, I think you should be thinking about making a pilot based on One Small Hitch.
Yeah, I have had some people say that. My publicist said that too. And I don't know. I guess my brain works more in terms of the feature world with a beginning, a middle, and an end, not episodic. But I would think it would be something that might be good. The characters are so rich. So yeah. It would be interesting and fun.
Or a sequel, maybe.
Or that's a sequel, possible.
Maybe, yeah. Yeah, I like that. So just, you know, for what it's worth. All right. Well, folks, listen. Watch for One Small Hitch. Directed by John Burgess and starring the lovely Aubrey Dollar in front of us here. Film festivals around the country and months to come. It'll eventually be hopefully in a theater near you or on a TV network, something like that. And if you're around the world, as John said, you already have opportunities to catch it. So, John Burgess, Aubrey Dollar, delightful to meet you both.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure meeting you as well.
Thank you guys for being on Mr. Media today.
Bye.
You can see and hear almost 1,000 Mr. Media interviews by visiting our main site, MrMedia.com, MrMedia.com. Or check out the more than 200 video interviews on the Mr. Media radio site on YouTube. And I'd sure appreciate if you'd show some love for Mr. Media's advertisers, including Stitcher. Apple named Stitcher a top 5 news app of 2011. It's a free mobile app for your smartphone or tablet that lets you listen to your favorite shows and discover the best of news, entertainment, and sports on demand. You can listen whenever you want to more than 5,000 shows, get customized recommendations, and discover what your friends are listening to. My own list of Stitcher favorites is pretty eclectic. I start my day with an hour of MSNBC's Morning Joe with Joe Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski. Then it's the latest two-minute update from the Onion News Network. After that, I'll listen to WTF with Marc Maron, Here's the Thing with Alec Baldwin, HBO's Real Time with Bill Maher, and excerpts from E's Chelsea Lately and The Soup with Joel McHale. Also in regular rotation on my Stitcher playlist, The BS Report with ESPN's Bill Simmons, The TechCrunch Headlines, and The Don Geronimo Show. The latest episodes of each show, whether originating from broadcasts, cable TV, radio syndication, or podcasts, are continuously updated. Stitcher is a free app for your iPhone, iPad, Kindle, Fire, BlackBerry, Droid, and more. And show your support of Mr. Media by getting, did I mention it's free? The app at stitcher.com/Mr. Media. That's stitcher.com/MR Media. Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. We're also supported by Audible. Check out Audible's 30-day trial membership and download the audiobook version of the book everyone's been talking about, 50 Shades of Grey by E.L. James. Sign up for your free trial today at audible.com/radio. Again, audibletrial.com/radio. And finally, if you need a disc jockey for a wedding, bar mitzvah, corporate event, or just a big old party, please consider calling 1-800-DIAL-DJS, the party authority for all your party entertainment needs. You can call 1-800-DIAL-DJS or go to their website, 1-800-DIAL-DJS.com, and tell them Mr. Media sent you. And thanks for listening. Today's episode of Mr. Media Interviews is brought to you by GoDaddy.com. You know GoDaddy.com from their wild and sexy commercials, but isn't it time you actually test drove their web hosting and domain registration services yourself? For a limited time, Mr. Media listeners can save 10% on the already low price of web hosting services at GoDaddy.com by entering the promo code POD4 at checkout. Again, that's 10% off web hosting when you go to GoDaddy.com and enter the promo code POD4, that's P-O-D, the number 4, at checkout.